All right. Hey, welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts, good afternoon. It is December the 13th, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. I hope it's great wherever you are at. It is Friday the 13th. Hopefully no one has had any unfortunate incidents today due to the calendar date. I've had a great day so far, knock on wood. I hate saying that now that I said it, but I've had a great day. Excellent day, in fact. Yeah, I got home. Everybody's out. I thought I'd maybe come up here and see if I could maybe do a podcast. You know, it's been a good few days. I don't really remember what I talked about the last time. But yeah, it's been a good few days. It is Friday. I'm going to go to a meeting tonight. Excited about that. You know, a lot of stuff going on, but at the same time, not a lot of stuff going on. I got a call the other day. So first of all, my anniversary is coming up. It's coming up on the 22nd, sort of on my mind. Probably going to have to sit somewhere and share. That's always fun, but always sort of, you know, personally, I love sharing. My disease hates it. So I got to work that out. That's coming up. December is always a great month with my anniversary and obviously Christmas and all the cool stuff that goes on. But that is on my mind. That is one thing. And then I got a phone call the other day. A buddy of mine asked me if I would come over and speak at a meeting that he is the secretary at for this month. And I was like, of course. Let me ask. Let me check with the wife and make sure she's cool, because, you know, I typically go to a meeting Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then I usually don't go to other meetings because, you know, I feel like that's a lot for, I think my family's like cool with it, but 3 meetings a week is a lot. So, but I checked in, she was like, cool. And I'm actually working with some new guys. And I actually asked if they would go with me. So they came over to the house last night and we rode up to another town, a bit of ways from here, about a half hour away. And I spoke at the meeting. It was really good. I don't really know what I said. I mean, I sort of know what I said. I sort of shared my story. But, you know, it's sort of a blur, right? I set a timer. I'm like, how long can I share? And he's like, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes. I'm like, oh, my God. All right. So I set a timer, right? And then he introduced me, of course. And then I obviously forgot to set the timer. But it was fine. You know, sometimes I want to try to make things complicated or, you know, really try to explain so people will understand really how this program works. And I have to remind myself that that's just not possible, right? I need to get up there. I need to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, if you're ever asked to share at a meeting, that's, you know, follow that sort of those guidelines and you should do just fine. But see, I don't particularly get into my drunk log. I don't like to talk about the drinking days. I feel like, you know, it's many facets of drinking days, but in the end, they're all the same, right? And so I don't talk about those days and how much I drink and where and what happened. I talk about March 31st, 1997. I woke up on that day not expecting to get sober. But by the end of the day, I would be in a program, and that would be the beginning of my journey, you know, to get sober. And, you know, it's an interesting journey I've shared. I won't get into a lot of details, but, you know, March 31st, I ended up getting sober that day. And it was the beginning of a great journey. And 5 years, 4.5 years later, I would drink. Not because I was hanging out in bars, right? Not because I was sniffing bottles, because I didn't like the way they collected the money at a meeting. And next thing you know, the disease had talked me into drinking because I deserved it. And by the end of the week, I was hiding bottles of vodka again. And it's just that fucking cunning and baffling and powerful. And so, you know, that's where I usually start my story. And, you know, I would bounce around a little bit and finally end up in York, Pennsylvania at a rehab. Marvin Lipscomb. And he's passed. Miss you, Marvin. Marvin would take me, could drive 4 hours, come get me. And then I would get back here 9 days later. And that's where I'd meet my buddy, Matt. Excuse me. And, you know, Matt H. would be my sponsor. Matt H. would be, you know, the guy that really saved my life. And probably 9 years from that point, he would die.
High or low, where'd you go? Are you stuck in the middle? A spectral, invisible ghost. I'm here juxtaposed, like images of angels in the snow. Our courage melts away, it comes and goes. Where you been? Can I find a glimpse of my friend? Don't know where or when one of us left the other behind. Divisions came and troubles multiplied. Incisions made by scalpel blades of time. My altered perception's unclear. Please interfere. Sadness comes with it, a sea of tears. Would some love be best had it not appeared? Is this you? Here I stand. Intense recollections of pain, self-neglecting again. Like you, I keep it in. Thought you found a game where you could win.
Pearl Jam comes, then goes. And Matt came, and then he left. And probably, and I've shared this before, talked about my boy Matt. Probably one of the greatest people I've ever met. And I miss him dearly. Miss him dearly. And, I'd come into the program in 97. I'd gotten a temporary sponsor, Ron M., and he was fantastic. And then I would get a couple more sponsors, and they were fantastic. And I hung out with a group of fellas who were all trying to get sober, and that was fantastic. And then I would drink, right? And, coming back and, asking him, I don't know if I've shared this, but 1998, I got sober in 97. 1998, my buddy Rick's like, hey, we got to go check out my buddy Matt. And I was like, okay, who's this guy? He's new to the town, right? It's like a Hallmark movie, Matt, and he's new to the town, and he's here to save the town. And I was like, cool, man. And he's sober, and he's opening a restaurant, and he opened a restaurant down in Bethany Beach. He was an amazing story. If you ever want to look up, his name's Matt Haley, look him up on YouTube. He won the James Beard Humanitarian of the Year Award. And if you're in the restaurant business or the service business, you know what the James Beard Award is. And he gives his speech. And if you just look him up, he was just an amazing dude. And he's like, we got to go check out my buddy. And so we go over there, and I remember walking in. He was down in Dewey Beach, and walking in this little apartment. It was like a bungalow apartment thing down by the beach, old house. And everywhere you looked was just food. And I don't mean like leftover food, but like made food. Like people, he had had like a Christmas holiday party, and there were people, and people had brought food, and he had made food. And I just was like, whoa, man. And I met him for the first time, and he was just a really, really cool, laid-back guy. I mean, laid-back. My dad used to drive my dad crazy. That wishy-washy attitude, that AA bullshit. But my dad loved Matt. My mom loved Matt. Matt actually put my mom's chili enchilada recipe on one of his menus at one of his restaurants, and she was like, "Oh my god!" And he was just an awesome dude, man. And but we'd be friends. We met that time, and we'd be friends for a while. And you know, I would later struggle and you know move away and then come back, and then start working at a hair salon next door to one of his restaurants. And when I got back from York, Pennsylvania, I saw him and I said, "Hey, man, I need help." And he was like, "You know, call me every day, man." I go, I need a sponsor." And he's like, I tell you what, call me every day and we'll see how it works." And I said, "Okay." And I'll never forget, man, I thought he must know that I know a lot of good stuff because he's asked me to call him. That's how fucked up I was. And I would call him the first day and he did not answer. And then I would call the second day and he did not answer. And I'm thinking something must be wrong, or, you know, I hope he's okay, right? And I would call the third day and he did not answer. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, doesn't he know, right? He asked me to call him and he can't even answer the phone, right? And so I finally call the fourth day and he finally answers. He's like, "Hey, man, thanks for calling. Call me tomorrow. Bye." And hung up. And I was like, shit, what is going on here? That seven number prayer, I guess it's 10 numbers now when you have to, the area code, but that 10-number prayer would teach me so many freaking things about who I am and how I think. And but I would dial that freaking number every single day. And him and I, he was just an amazing sponsor, and he was an amazing example of how this program works. And, you know, he said, "This program will love you until you learn how to love yourself." And I was like, what does that mean to love myself, right? And so he had a lot of great things. And I just, you know, I'll never forget him, man. And I'll never forget the day he passed because I was at a meeting. So he was in India. He was a freaking traveler. He was like, you know, one of these guys you see on the Travel Channel. And that's what he wanted to do. You know, he opened a bunch of restaurants. He became famous. He wanted to be, you know, I forget the guy's name, but he wanted to be on a Travel Channel. And he was actually in negotiations to do something like that. He had Books and Coffee down in Dewey. He would film that. He would help the prisons. He would help the nuns. I mean, this guy was just a freaking, just an amazing human being. And, but you know, over time, you know, we would, you know, obviously he was my sponsor, and, but he would just teach me a lot of cool lessons and, learning how to let the program love me until I learned how to love myself. And, you know, over time, I understood that. When I said that the first time, when he said that to me the first time, I didn't quite understand what he meant because I've already felt like I love myself. And what he meant was, you know, work these steps, work this program, and you will start to lose fear. And when fear leaves you, love comes in. And it's an amazing thing. He had so many great sayings, you know. He used to say, "Hey, man, as long as you don't smoke crack and pay for hookers, bro, it'll all work out." And I was like, and for a guy that overcomplicates things, for a guy that makes things too complicated, I understood what he was saying. And, you know, just very indebted to that man. And I remember, I remember when, so he was in India, and he got into a motorcycle accident coming down the Mount Everest or wherever he was at. He was up there in the Nepal, right? He was up there. And he hit the back of a truck somehow. I don't know really the exact story, but he was too sick to move and too sick to stay. And a friend of mine, Michelle, called us. I remember I was at a meeting, my phone was ringing, and it was my buddy James, and I was like, I put him into voicemail. It rang again, and then I finally picked it up, and he's like, "Hey," he goes, "Matt's been in an accident." And I was like, "Oh shit, what happened?" And she's like, or he goes, "He was in a motorcycle accident. He's okay. He's alive. Don't know all the details." I was like, "Okay, right, all right, shit." And, you know, then we're just sort of waiting, you know, just trying to hear what information we could hear. And then, it was on a Wednesday. I was with my buddy Scott. We were having breakfast and we got a phone call, and, they said, "Yeah, Matt passed away." And I was like, "Oh my God." My friend Michelle had gone to India to try to get him. And they said, if we move him, he's going to die. If he stays here, he's going to die. So they tried to move him, and he died. And that was the end of Matt. And I'll never forget, because I felt like the whole world stopped, just pumped the brakes. And it was just a rough time. It was a life-changing event, because I really, really relied on that guy for a lot. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but you know, I really looked up to him. You know, I've shared stories how I would drive over. He'd be like, come over, man. Come pick me up and take me to a meeting. And I was like, okay. Or no, take me to the meeting with you. You know, he wasn't like, take me to a meeting. But he's like, if you're going to a meeting, come by and get me. And I said, all right. And I remember, like, I would drive, you know, one hand on the wheel, slouched down in the chair, no seat belt, music up. And I would pull into his driveway. And I'd, you know, slide up in my chair and put my seat belt on and 10 and 2, music down. Because I wanted Matt to think that I had my shit together, right? Matt was like my first higher power, right? My first God, right? And he wasn't. But, you know, I wanted, you know, and I think when I look back, I think, you know, I want him to think that I'm doing good. And that's sort of how I look at my relationship with the higher power now. I feel like God is looking down on me, and I want to be the best that I can be because I know he's watching, right? Whatever. But yeah, he would pass, and then, you know, I was just sort of out there on my own. And the funny thing is that when he died, the whole town was devastated where I live. I mean, he had a bunch of restaurants, tons of friends, and he was the kind of guy you would be like, I think I'm his only friend. And you would learn later on, I mean, when they had his memorial, it was at the Freeman Stage down in Bethany Beach, and it was like where they have concerts. And that's how many people were there. I was like, oh my God. So anyway, this isn't really about that. But the point is, I went and spoke at a meeting last night and over in Frankfurt, and there was a bunch of people, man, that were, that's sort of Matt, his stomping ground, right? He had restaurants over there in Fenwick. And so, you know, I shared last night in my story and talked about Matt and just, you know, opened up a lot of old wounds, I guess. And, you know, a bunch of people shared after I spoke and just, you know, talked about how amazing Matt was. And, you know, one guy's like, you know, when you mentioned his name, I almost burst out in tears because, a lot of people, you know, loved him. He loved a lot of people. And when he passed, it was just devastating to all of us. And so, it was great to be at that meeting and catch up with these guys and, share our stories of Matt and, you know, just remind ourselves how blessed we were that we were able to have him in our lives for however long it was. But I do believe if it wasn't for Matt, I don't know if I'd like to say that I would still be sober or here, but, you know, he was a huge, huge influence on me in my sobriety. There was times where I stayed sober just so I could stay friends with Matt. And not that I was like wanting to drink, but you know, I'm like, listen, I'm sober. I'm friends with Matt. I'm doing good. This is good. I need to, you know, keep working on it. He was that big of an influence. And, you know, one of the things I've always said, you know, I go to New York every once in a while. And I've said, you know, if I go to New York by myself, I have the worst time, right? But if I can go to New York with somebody that knows the city, I have the best time. And that's how Matt was as far as this program went. And, you know, I've done this program with other sponsors and other people, and it was okay. But when I did this program with Matt in my life, it was awesome. And I just owe him everything. But, you know, the point of it was just great to catch up with these guys. And then one of the guys is like, do you have anything of his? And I was like, no, I do not. And he's like, I got some stuff. I'll give you some stuff that you can have of his. And I was like, awesome. But, you know, the point of it is that now I'm working with some new guys, and they, you know, they have to call me every day. Or they don't have to. It's a suggestion. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And I've shared about it. You know, that is the disease, right? Just like last night, Sharon, I'm like, I love to share, but my disease hates it. And of course, I talked about the devils and stuff. And, you know, some people's eyes roll back in their head, and that's fine. But, you know, that's what sort of helps me figure out, you know, what's going on in the day. You know, what demons am I dealing with? One guy was funny because he said, hey, you know, sometimes, you know, I just got to get in that basket of character defects and pull a couple out and, you know, play around. And you know, that is to me where, you know, because, you know, I've said before, sobriety does not keep us sober. Serenity is what keeps us sober. And The only thing that keeps us from holding the hand of God are our character defects and our shortcomings. Because any time we don't bring those out, they create fear. And any time there's fear, all of a sudden we are not holding the hand of God. We are out there on our own, living in self. And, you know, that's not a good place to be. So great meeting. Super glad to go out there and be able to share. Met this guy, Patrick, who I've known for a while. Ended up having a great conversation with him. He raises bees. I'm big into bees. I love honey. I'm like, I want to raise bees. Of course, I announced that to my wife. She's like, we're not having bees. So sort of got in an argument about that. Hopefully we can figure it out. A lot of things are coming at me telling me I can't raise bees, but I want to figure it out because I love bees and I love honey. So, but he was, you know, talking to him, became very interested in the stuff he's doing. He had 19 months. It was just super blessed to be involved in a program with a bunch of good people, you know, all trying to do the same thing, which is just stay sober one day at a time. And, you know, it's tough. It can be tough. So that's it. Let me read the daily reflections. I am going to a meeting and, yeah, let's see here. Daily reflections. Here we go. Maybe this will talk about Matt. Yeah. All right, December 13th, thinking of others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 20. Thinking of others has never come easy to me. Even when I try to work in a program, I'm prone to thinking, how do I feel today? Am I happy, joyous, and free? The program tells me that my thoughts must reach out to those around me. Would that newcomer welcome someone to talk to? That person looks a little unhappy today. Maybe I could cheer him up. It is only when I forgot my problems and reach out to contribute something to others that I can begin to attain the serenity and God consciousness I seek. Yeah, that's right. You know, I was talking to someone today and they were talking about the person in their life who is going through some depression. And I was like, I get it, man. I get it. And, you know, one of the things about Matt, I'll never forget. He used to tell me, if you talk about something, if you're having a problem, talk about it with somebody. It will cut it in half. And that's true. Right? Because self, right, that demon, doesn't want you to discuss it. It wants you to keep it inside and, you know, grind it and, you know, what is it? Mull it over, right? And keep shaved, looking at it and suffering with it. But as soon as you dump it out, it cuts it in half. And I remember he used to, and I think I've shared this, but he won the James Beard Humanitarian of the Year Award, which is freaking incredible. And he called me and he's like, hey, can you come over? And I was like, yeah. And I went over there and he was in his house and he was in his closet. And, you know, if anybody that listens to podcast knew Matt, they knew he only wore blue jeans and white button-up shirts, right? And not even like ironed ones, like, you know, 100% cotton, wrinkly, and flip-flops. And that's how he was when I first met him. He was that way for a long time. At the end, he was starting to dress up. He was dating a couple people, and I think he was trying to take his look to the next level. But, you know, all he had in his closet were blue jeans, white t-shirts, or white shirts, and flip-flops. And I went over there, and he's up there looking for a tie, and because he's got to go to New York and accept this award. And he's like, do you mind if we go for a walk? And I was like, absolutely. And so we go for a walk around the block and he goes, you know, I just have this feeling like they're just going to figure out, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And I was like, my daughter's downstairs. And I'm like, what do you mean that you don't know what you're doing? You're Matt Haley, man. You're about to win the James Beard Humanitarian of the Year Award. And I don't know how many years he had, 25 years, 24 years, you know, successful entrepreneur, restaurant owner, and he is worried that they're going to figure out he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And I was like, man. you know, it's just a great reminder. This is a one day at a time program. You know, we have no free pass, no get out of jail. We work at this every day, and this disease will come at us every day, every way. Just when you think, you know, you have it all figured out, it comes out at a different way. And, you know, that's why it's great to do this one day at a time and just stay on our toes. And, yeah, I'm thinking of Matt today. Great to do the meeting yesterday. Great to touch base with those folks. And I appreciate you letting me sit down. And thanks for letting me share. Later.
Is this you? Here I stand. Intense recollections of pain self-neglecting again. Like you, I keep it in. Thought you found a game. It's a vivisection in the end. Comes and goes. Comes and goes. Sadness comes 'cause some of it was mine.